It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today we are back to the beginner's guide of Japanese professional wrestling. And I have two guests to look at a show from a very interesting company back in 1995. And as per usual, because of as of late, they are both in a box because they're both in my phone rather than on the computer where they should be. But Skype's rubbish now. No one should use Skype anymore. We've decided. So will you please welcome, first of all, Chelsea Spolin from Shoulders Up. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm okay, apart from technology. I'm buying a Chromebook this week. I actually blew up a computer this morning. Never done that before. To try and circumvent the crap that's going on with Skype, I was going to plug the headphone socket from one computer into the microphone socket of another computer. Plugged in the old computer I was going to do it with, and it shut down. And I was like, oh, that's all right. And then plugged it in again, turned it all on again, and there was this... psh, and then flames started coming out of it, and smoke went everywhere.
Flames?
Yes. I blew up a transformer.
A lot of technology died so that we could make this podcast.
Yes, yes. Morning. My, I can't even remember what make it is. My NEC computer. Also joining us today is Christy from Wrestling Sexism and New Japan Gifts. How are you, Mum?
I'm okay. I'm doing really well, actually.
Excellent. That's really good to hear.
I'm the beginner in the beginner's guide, so...
Yes.
Oh, no, me too.
No, you're not. I've listened to all of them. You're not a beginner anymore.
I don't know. I still feel like one.
It's a massive subject. I sometimes feel like a beginner too when I find something new that I don't know about. It's like catch wrestling account on Twitter. I like following that because I know a lot about catch wrestling, but not the actual intricacies of the moves and stuff. And that's fascinating to watch people do that for hours at a time.
Whenever we do these shows, I'm always surprised by how much there actually really is to know and how little of it I actually know.
Well, we can't all be Chris Charlton, can we?
That's true. And I mean, like, oh my God, that guy is like... that guy knows things that I'm like, how did you get somebody to tell you that?
He's got a new book out soon. I'm reviewing it for Total Wrestling. So
isn't it out for ebook purchase?
Yes, it is. Yes. Darren has promised me a copy so I can review it for the magazine. So I will let you know how it is.
Yeah, please do. I liked his first one. It was very informative.
Okay then, well, we move on to what we're talking about today, which is LLPW, or Ladies Legend Pro Wrestling. Now, this company we've not really looked at before. We've looked at some of the big stars like Eagle Sai Wei and Shinobi Kandori, but we haven't really looked at the concept of the entire company, and it takes a little bit of explaining. Now, back in 1990, JWP was formed and founded, and it was the first alternative Joshi group to All Japan Women that there had been on a major scale. They had TV with Fuji TV. They had all the things that you expect a modern professional wrestling company to have in that era. But after about a year or so, it became clear that there was two factions within the dressing room which couldn't coexist together. There was the entertainers, people like Kid Bolshoi, Command Bolshoi, and that side of the group. And there was the shooters, people like Shinobi Kandori, Eagle Sai Wei, and that side of the locker room. So they decided to part and become their own company, Ladies Legend Pro Wrestling. And what we're looking at today is the third anniversary show. They formed in 1992 and clearly had a big reputation, certainly Shinobi Kandori. We've talked a lot about her on the Dream Slam series and at the Egg Dome show with AJW. She's done a lot of cool stuff. Eagle Sai Wei, the same. Hayley Sato. They had some big name stars and they had some very interesting younger people coming up in the card as well, who we'll talk about pretty much from the first match onwards. So my first question goes to Chelsea, as you've watched a lot of Joshi from this era. How do you think it stacks up as a company, and what were your thoughts on LLPW before we started?
I had no thoughts on LLPW before we started because I didn't really know anything about it beyond the fact that I had seen it occasionally referred to on people's Wikipedia pages. I don't think it's a company where there's a whole lot of information in English available in the places I normally read about wrestling. I think it's a really interesting product. It has that kind of very organic, rough around the edges quality that like early ECW has. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like you can tell that, I mean, even though it's professionally filmed and it does have some production values that are really pretty good, you can tell also that like there are certain things that are new to not just the wrestlers but also the people making the product. They try some weird and risky stuff and it doesn't always work. Also, I think probably the thing that stood out to me when I was watching it is, I mean, Christy said this actually in the chat that we had while we were talking about the show before we were recording this, that it's hard to tell sometimes what the story to each match is because everybody's a jerk. Like, that heel-face dynamic isn't present in every match, which is not that uncommon to Joshi in the era, but I feel like showing off your toughness and showing how resilient you are when somebody's trying to beat you down is like the common thread throughout all the matches in this, in a way that, I mean, I guess that's a theme in all of professional wrestling, but it feels like the most common theme here to me is like, you know, you punched me in the face with a chain, well, I'm going to knock your legs out from under you so that your face hits the mat really hard. Like, it's very aggressive, and I like that. I mean, like, it kind of feels a little punk to me, like, watching it, which is, it's not at a time where I would have thought that would be the aesthetic, but it feels much more punk to me than, say, like, AJW ever does.
Yeah, I think AJW is the establishment. Though they do some wild things, it's all within a safer boundary, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's really interesting because to me, because of my frame of reference specifically, like I'm used to watching primarily WWE, and I've watched some Stardom and other things. Like I'm used to watching other women's wrestling products. So to me, AJW has oftentimes in my head kind of felt anti-establishment, especially when you compare it to men's wrestling from the era.
Yeah.
So seeing a product that is even more so, that's like, we're even more out there and that's why you like us, was really interesting.
Christy, you've watched a lot of modern day Joshi. What do you think of this and how do you think it stacks up to what you've seen?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm a total newbie to this. I've never seen older Joshi than the stuff I watch now.
Hmm.
That's mostly because I get overly invested in stuff, so if I started watching old stuff, I'd never stop. And I'd get overwhelmed, and I'd probably stop watching wrestling again, because I did that before. I got so into wrestling that I wouldn't watch anything else, and I got burned out, and I stopped. So I haven't done that, so this is completely new to me. This and any kind of older Joshi wrestling is new, and it was really exciting on the one hand and really confusing on the other. Like Chelsea said before, it wasn't clear whose side I was supposed to be on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the first match in a bit, but I realized in the third or fourth match that the person who I thought was the babyface in the first match wasn't actually a babyface.
Right.
Yeah. It was so confusing because everyone was a dick to each other. They were all kicking each other's ass and breaking rules and all over the place. And that was confusing to me. Then there was trying to figure out who was who. For a new fan, this was completely confusing. there was no way to find out who was on what team. If you didn't have some sort of review or summary, and even then it was really confusing. I was trying to read through the link you gave me, which had some notes on the matches, and trying to figure out, oh, that person that did that big move, that means that's them then, and that must be their opponent, and that must be their her tag team partner. It was so confusing.
Especially in the third match where they're both dressed alike.
Yeah,
And they have the same hairstyle, and they're roughly the same build, and the quality isn't perfect. You don't get zoom-ins on their faces a lot, so it was trying to figure out who was who and who was I was supposed to root for was difficult. On the other hand, it was really exciting stuff, and there were a couple of matches that I really got into, and there were a couple of wrestlers that I really liked. I think if I had the benefit of knowing who these people were and knowing what the storylines were, if there were any, or what the plots were, then I would have enjoyed it even more.
I think that is the trouble with this particular presentation. This isn't like a full show of one event. It isn't the third anniversary show. It's the best of the third year of LLPW, essentially. The matches they thought were best representing the company at the time. So it chops all over me. It starts in Currican Hall and chops all over the place and comes back to Currican. So it is difficult to kind of get a thread to what was happening. You can see some obvious things. But I kind of think probably the thing to talk about is probably the personalities, I suppose, really, because they do shine out. We'll go to the first match anyway. Jen Yukari and Mikiku Fatagami versus Michiko Amikai and Keiko Aono. Have I got any of them right, Chelsea?
So, to be honest, I don't have the whole list written down because on that page that you gave me, it was so confusing to figure out which match was which that half my notes are just, like, I numbered the matches and I wrote, like, what based on what people were wearing. You were sort of close on some of those, but I think
I think
at least one of them was a little off.
Out of all of these wrestlers, the big star today, well, she's no longer a big star because she's retired, but Mikiko Futagami is better known as Gami, who owns and runs Wave Pro Wrestling. And really, she kind of was the standout star in this, partly because you kind of know who she is. And when you know who she is, you go, well, there's a reason why she's so good. But also, there's a lot of stuff in here. She's very innovative with what she does. The first thing that I've got down in my notes is the costumes. They're all so fancy. It's incredible. And also, like, the production values. I know we said, like, they don't do a lot of zoom and a lot of pullback and stuff. But they've got, like, twin screens for when you've got a tag team match and they're both brawling outside the ring. So they twin screened it so you could see both fights at once. And I haven't seen anyone do that, which is the obvious thing to do. But no one does it.
I hated that, though.
Oh, okay, then.
My brain was so confused as to which one to focus on.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's the reason why they don't do it. Maybe I was wrong.
Yeah, it was a little too much. I sort of agree. It's kind of like when have you ever played a two-player video game with a split screen and you look at the wrong one by accident when you're playing?
I know,
like,
I know.
I don't know. I think there's a reason people don't do that.
I know on the NFL Network, they do. They can sometimes, they'll put like all the, if something interesting is happening in the game, like on Sunday afternoon, they'll put more than one game up at once on one screen. And occasionally they've got to five games on one screen at once. And that must be insane. Why would you even bother?
I cannot imagine loving anything as much as NFL fans. And I'm a wrestling fan, a pretty hardcore wrestling fan. That's dedication. If you're going to watch something with five split screens so you don't miss any angle of anything, you really care.
Yes, true. Fair enough then. Okay. But those are the kind of things that really kind of stuck out to me. The one thing that really stuck out to me in this match was Gami catching a knee after someone dived off the top rope for a crossbody, but she caught the knee and turned it into an ankle lock. Now, that's a move we see quite regularly these days. For instance, Asuka against Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania and various other people's Mika Satomura is another person who does it. And I'm wondering if Gami was actually the innovator of that because I ain't seen anyone do it before her. But what did you think of the match, Chelsea? What did you think of this and the characters involved?
So, I thought this was interesting. Obviously, Gami is the person in it that I was most familiar with. I didn't know at first. I took me a second to figure out who she was, but I was like, oh, okay, I know her. I love how colorful the costumes are, but then they're kind of all dressed like they're going to a play about wood sprites, but then they beat the crap out of each other. And I love that. I love that. I don't know what to call it.
Disconnect?
Love that, aesthetic in 90s Joshi, where everybody is just like, we're going to try every fashion thing you can possibly think of to see if it sticks. And who cares if it doesn't make me look like a vicious killer that I have fringe hanging off of my back. I'm just going to try it and you'll like it. I think you can tell in this match that not every girl in it has the same amount of experience. Some of the girls in particular seemed like they knew the basics of how to do certain stuff, but when they were trying to do more complicated things, I kind of watched it and thought a couple times, you need more practice at that.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. Like, it was a cool way to open this show, but watching it kind of felt to me like something that wouldn't have been at the start of an episode if it was actually like, I mean, you know, it's all chopped up.
Yeah.
It felt to me like something that maybe would have come in like the middle
of a live show.
And yeah, what you were saying about Gami, you know, now that you've said that, I think I've seen most recently Zack Sabre Jr. catch somebody trying to give him a knee.
Yeah.
An ankle lock like that.
Was it? It must have been Makabe during the G1, was it?
Probably.
Something like somebody
yeah,
like that.
Sounds
yeah.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right. Mm. But yeah, I mean, like this is fun, and there is some creative stuff in it, but it doesn't entirely gel together as okay. I know exactly what story that you were trying to tell me with it. It's just kind of a whole bunch of fun when you're watching it. Like, everybody is trying things and seeing if they work.
Yes. Experimental. It's not as disciplined as AJW, is it? Or even JWP, from what we've watched before.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. AJW in particular, I feel like every single match I've ever seen on an AJW card, it has that sense of somebody sat down and was like, what is the goal here? And told the wrestlers, or the wrestlers decided, you know, like, this is the thing you were supposed to be telling the audience. You better stick to it.
Yeah.
And this was more freeform. This was, okay, you know how to do a crossbody off the top rope. Let's see if you can do a crossbody off the top rope and if I can catch you and do a suplex. And not all of it worked as a result of that, but I don't know, like, I appreciated that they were trying stuff, because there's so much in Joshi that is so innovative that gets discovered by accident.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Christy, what did you think of this match as it was your first experience of LLPW?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was exciting. I went into it not knowing what to expect. Because I've seen clips of older Joshi, and like half of his is people bleeding, and the other half of his is people getting their head kicked off. So I was like, okay, what are we getting into here? It was funny seeing Kodokan Hall, actually, because I'm so used to it from a certain look from New Japan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it was looking very different, and it's older, obviously. It's a while ago. But that was really interesting. And then the match, the crowd got so into it. And it was a bit jarring for me because it was the first match. And I know it wasn't the first match, as in it wasn't a total card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't actually a first match on a show. But it was kind of startling how into it people were. And then I was like, okay, no, that's because it might have been halfway, like you said, or even at the end of a show. And they were really into both sides, which was the start of me being confused. The good guy was supposed to be until Omukai, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that mm-hmm. right, started being the one that was clearly the babyface in peril. And she was teamed up with the person, I think, who had the least experience.
Kyoko Aono. Because she was wearing a swimsuit, so therefore, obviously, she was a rookie.
Yeah. It was so clear to me that she had little to no experience, because she was out of the match for most of it. She was, you could tell by the look on her face that she was a bit daunted by everything.
Mm.
But I really enjoyed it. I especially enjoyed Omukai's selling as a babyface, and I have no experience with Gami, as you call her.
Yeah.
I would not have recognized her. I'm a total noob. So if I know the story, I am. I'm just going to be honest about that. If you hadn't told me, I wouldn't have known.
She went, to give you a quick potted history, she went on to be part of Arcyon later in the decade, and then she founded Wave in the new wave of Japanese companies in the early 2000s, once AJW and Gaia closed down. Mm. And she's still the president of Wave and still books for them.
Yeah, well, you could tell that she was, well, and not different, I'd say, but she was very calm.
Yeah.
And she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
Especially when she was in the ring with Aono, you could really see the difference in confidence.
I do remember there was an LLPW versus AJW card when she was a rookie and she got Aja Kong in a best of three series between LLPW versus AJW, and she was the last match and Aja killed her. This is the nicest way of saying it. It was full Aja mode.
They're friends now, aren't they?
They are friends now. But the three AJW representatives were Yamada, Manami Toyota, and Aja Kong.
Ouch.
And none of them got to their finishers. They all finished the matches off with... Manami won it with the Oklahoma Roll. She didn't even get to the moonsault. And then at the end of Toyota's match, Toyota and Yamada held the ropes open for Aja to go kill Gami. And it was like, there you go. All yours.
I love that. That's yeah. Great.
Okay.
That's like one of my favorite things about baby faces in 90s Joshi is there's that level of like, okay, but we have to win this. So even though we don't necessarily... want to win by cheating or by, you know, like royally crushing you, we're still going to crush you. We're so competitive that we have to win.
Yes. This is our company versus your company, and we have to destroy you. We can't just beat you. We have to wipe the mat with your face. That's the way it has to be. We're very sorry about this. Let us move on. Okay, the next match on this particular tape was Mika Handa versus Norio Tatiano. Now, you may remember Norio Tatiano because she was one half of the Jumping Bomb Angels, who we have talked an awful lot about on this particular series. And essentially, Handa was running the old foreign object gimmick and was basically trying to stab Tatiano in the throat, mainly, and the referee from time to time, too. And it was a bit of a mess, but it was an all right mess, but it was still a bit of a mess. What do you think of this, Christy? As the second match you see is like this gory awfulness.
Well, I don't know who either of these people are, and I'm probably going to get lots of hate from people for not knowing anyone.
Just block and ignore them, girl. Don't even.
Well, this match was one where they kept cutting away to different spots.
Yeah.
And that was... They kept doing it in other matches as well, and I get why, especially because this compilation is already very long. But on the other hand, I like an ongoing story, and this felt more like, we want you to see this, but we're going to show you the important bits, but not the rest of the story, or how we got there, or... And I think that added to my confusion, because I have notes here. And at one point, I've written down, I'm just confused who I'm supposed to root for. Oh, she got disqualified. That's the end of my notes.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does strike... Yeah, I mean, it does. It floats back and forth, this match, and it doesn't really have a set narrative. It just seems to be Handa trying to beat up Tatiano for no apparent reason. So when you don't have the context of it, it does tend to be... Oh, it was a bit of a bad choice, really. I'm sure there must have been better matches that they could have done just as standalone great matches on this.
Yeah, and the easiest story is bad guy and good guy. But neither of these were good in any way. They were both just assholes to each other, to the referee, and if you're a new... watcher like me, then having any kind of reference as to this is a person who plays by the rules or doesn't play by the rules is helped by the by knowing that, I don't know how to explain this, it helps understanding the match when there's at least someone who has some sort of character. Because the character of about 90% of the people on this card seems to be asshole.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Which can be fun, but is confusing if you're not really into it.
Yeah, you have to know everything first.
Yeah, or at least have some sort of idea of what the storyline has been, or what these people have gone through, what these characters have gone through, because I knew nothing. And that just means, okay, this person is an asshole, this person is an asshole, and they're fighting because they want to be top asshole? I don't know.
That's fairly reasonable.
Yeah. I did write down one other thing, and that was, I see that offering people flowers and then getting hit with them remains a constant.
Oh, wrestling. Yes. That has been a constant since Abdullah the Butcher first turned up in all Japan in the early 1970s. We have Abdullah to thank for that, I'm pretty sure. Though I think he tended to eat his flowers.
Oh, gosh.
Because he's Abdullah and he can do what he likes. What did you think of this, Chelsea?
So, I, too, was confused by the cutaways. There were some moments where I kind of got invested in something, and then it would, you know, be like, here's a different moment in the match. And I was like, oh, what happened in the middle? I enjoyed this. I mean, both of those two are really good. And there's a feeling, again, of there's this experimental thing where they're like, I'm just going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at you and try it out and see if it works. I don't get the sense that either of them are really used to having hardcore matches.
No.
So I kind of felt like there was some stuff with the chain, and there was some, I don't know if it was like a wrench or something, or like a chisel of like trying to stab your opponent. But, that was interesting. You could tell both of them were a little nervous about it and trying to figure out how to make it look cool without actually hurting each other, which I appreciated that they weren't actually trying to kill each other. But what's interesting is they're both such good wrestlers. Like, and I see this disparity sometimes when I watch hardcore Joshi matches from people who are not like known for really big gruesome spots is, you know, you get this, like, I'm going to try to stab you in the throat, and then they get back in the ring, and it's like, oh, but here's a really beautiful exploder suplex. And I'm like, well, okay, but those two things aren't telling the same story. Like, does it make sense that your character, who would be like, I'm going to stab you in the throat with a chisel, is also a really good techniker? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, it was interesting, because I don't know if that stipulation was something that, like, got pushed on them by the company, where the company's like, you're going to do this. And they were both like, oh, shit, how? Or if they were just trying stuff out to see if it works. It's interesting that they both feel so much more confident when they get a couple of minutes in of just solid ring work. Yeah. Where, you know, there's some mat wrestling, there's, I think I wrote down in my notes, surfboard stretch, like, they get some interesting stuff in there. I don't know that the way that this is presented on this tape really gives you an opportunity to appreciate what either of them do really well. The stuff that they show you is interesting, but I sort of felt like either they should have picked a different match, maybe that was a little shorter so they didn't have to cut it, or, I mean, I don't know. I just think the way it's presented, it doesn't give you an opportunity to fully appreciate it.
No, I agree with you there. I think it's perfectly fine for what it is, but it's not the best work from either of them. There's elements of really good work, but it's like Norio Tatiano as well. I mean, she became a big star wrestling Dump Matsumoto. So you kind of think this should be her comfort zone, or she just got completely scared from wrestling Dump Matsumoto. Understandable.
Dump Matsumoto... If you Google Dump Matsumoto, if you've never seen what Dump Matsumoto looks like somehow, if you Google her, you will understand why wrestling her could be traumatizing.
Yes. Utterly traumatizing. Even to this day, and she's nearly 60. and she still terrifies me. Okay, then.
She's pretty scary.
She's just scary, scary. Okay, in fact, she will appear later in this tape. Bit of a spoiler there. But anyway, next match was an actual proper hardcore no disqualification match, which pitted Michiko Nakashima versus Karina Yashi. Now, Yashi was kind of the babyface in this one, and Nakashima was kind of the heel. And Yashi had a bit of a reputation for being a hard case. In fact, she feuded with Akira Hokuto in AJW in a cross-promotional series where Akira beat the shit out of her, as she does, to be honest. But Yashi and Nakashima had quite a brutal and interesting hardcore match here. Now, according to the notes, it went 4 minutes and 49 seconds of a 23 and 58-minute match, which would tell you there was a lot of waiting for the cameras to take pretty pictures of people bleeding and stuff. And there was a lot of screaming. A lot of screaming. But there was an awful lot of table work, and it was violent but not particularly unsafe. I kind of enjoyed it. It's kind of a hardcore match that I could get behind, because it was no one's going to get their head knocked off, but they really went for it. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
Sorry, my mute wouldn't turn off. This, I thought, was really interesting. I agree with you. I enjoyed this. It's cool when I get to see people do hardcore stuff where I don't have to watch through my fingers. I really, in particular, liked some of the technical wrestling they did with the handcuffs, because I've never really seen anybody do that before, and that was really cool. I worry a little bit that maybe somebody might have broken their ribs with some of those spots where it's like, I'm just gonna jump on top of you with 20 chairs piled on you. But still, I mean, I've seen worse. I thought this was fun. I thought it was engaging. I thought that, I don't know, kind of the interesting thing about it to me is that these two felt like they were trying to create a template for themselves, or maybe like for everybody else, I don't know. The vibe I got was like they were trying to set a precedent for, okay, this is how you properly do this stuff. And maybe that was how it felt in contrast to the match before it, but it really felt like they were both pretty confident, and they were like both really going for it, which is fun. I like that.
What did you think of it, Christy?
This is actually one of my favorite matches from this card. Well, card, this compilation. I thought it was really fun. I'm not usually a person who's into weapons change and stuff like that, but I really enjoyed this one. They started out with chains, and they just kept going and going and going with it. I actually really enjoyed it so much that I would have loved to have seen the entire match and not just the cuts that they were doing, because they were doing more and more cuts during the match, and I would have liked to have seen all of it. There were a couple of unprotected headshots that I could have done without.
Yeah, that's kind of the era. Every company did that at the time, and it's not good.
I'm still going to mention it.
Yeah.
And at one point, Yasha was bleeding, but I couldn't quite figure out why. And maybe they cut that away, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they did.
But like Chelsea said, the spots with the handcuffs were awesome and creative. They had spots with the tables that were really creative. There was one table spot that gave me the chills.
Was it that impact driver onto a table?
Yeah.
Yeah. It did me. It was like, no.
That one was maybe a bit much, but as long as they're okay. Hindsight, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen somebody do that quite that way before either. Like, I was watching, I was like, how did they figure that out?
There's a lot of crossing fingers and hoping your face doesn't hit the floor first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Nakashima kept being slammed into tables and on top of tables and underneath the tables, and then she kept bridging out of the pin, and I love that so much. Just this, I'm not even going to just kick out, I'm going to bridge out while my face is pushed into a table. And then the end of it was eventually she couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
But it was really, really fun. Another match where face heel wasn't really clear to me. You say Yasha was supposed to be the face.
Yasha was the more popular. That doesn't mean she was the face, I guess, necessarily. But she was the only one asking for crowd approval.
It wasn't clear to me at all. The next match was clearer, so maybe Nagashima is supposed to be the heel. I don't know. it's so confusing.
Okay, well, we'll go on.
At that point you said about people bridging out of pins, like, if you bridge out of a pin, that's a fuck you. That's not just, yeah, I'm kicking out. That's a go fuck yourself. I can get out of this on my own.
I was watching something that reminded me, last year's King of Trios final. I was watching GIFs this morning from the Shikami account, and one of the GIFs was Meiko Satomura kicking out of Pete Dunne's tombstone on one. And not just kicking out, pushing him away like he had a disease.
Oh!
And it was like, oh, I remember that. Oh, that was awesome. Oh, anyway.
Well, she gets to do that.
Yes, because she is God.
Meiko can do anything she wants, and I'm like, I'm here for it, queen.
Yeah. And clearly does. Like, you know. Do you want to sign with us after 7 years of asking? All right, then. Yeah, well, I'm not doing anything that weekend. Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Cross your fingers for me that she may get to come to Evolution.
I would do. I will
do. I'll be there, and I want to see her.
Okay, then. Well, we move on to the next match. Yoshi is back in this one, and so is Nakashima. It's a tag match which kind of furthers the feud. Yoshi tags with Mizuki Endo, who's a bit of a youngster at this point and a bit of a shoot specialist. And Mickey Handa, the weapons wielder from the second match, is back tagging with Nakashima. My notes are kind of interesting. Hard punches, intense, breaking down into a brawl. And then, what's going on with Nakashima's shorts? Because they were... Actually, I realized after watching them, because she has like this strap effect thing, but Asuka in her Kana days wore very similar tights in Japan. So maybe she set a trend. But yes. Endo won this with a triangle choke, which is amazing, because this is like a proper brawling pro wrestling match all the way through, and it ends with a proper submission. So, Christy, what did you think of this particular one?
This is the second match that I really loved from this show. I really loved Endo. I know she's a rookie, but I loved her look.
Yeah.
I loved how she went into it. She didn't seem scared at all. She was the one in peril constantly. She was the one being beaten up, but she looked great while she was being beat up. And there were some great heel tactics from the one team, Honda and Nagashima. There was great teamwork by them that I hadn't seen before on this card. It was mostly just singles matches and brawling and all over the place, but they had some teamwork in this as well. There was, again, no clear definition between face and heel. It seemed like Endo was supposed to be the one that we felt sorry for and that we got behind, but then her tag team partner choked someone from the top rope. So I was like, okay, so are we supposed to root for Endo alone? And yeah, that was confusing again, but everything is confusing to me. I really enjoyed this one. And I loved seeing Endo have a different style, but also being inexperienced, yet being completely awesome with these three more experienced women. So I would have liked to have seen where she ended up.
I think Endo kind of like sums up what the LPW style is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about straight ahead shoot style wrestling. It's very much that Wigan aesthetic. The kind of thing you see from Katsuyori Shibata and Zack Sabre Jr. now, it's that supposed to be that kind of aesthetic, especially when you had people like Kandori and Harley Sato at the top end of the company. Their trainees were going to come out very similar. Interestingly, out of all of the original three Joshi companies, LLPW, JWP, and AJW, LLPW is the only one that still exists. It doesn't put cards on very often, once a year, and it's mainly just a kind of a roster association, so they tend to work for other companies as a faction, but they do run their own shows every about once a year or so. So I find it interesting that the name like LLPW or LLPWX, as it's now known, still keeps going. But this company kind of like was kind of the third rail, I guess. It wasn't as prominent as the other two at the beginning of its term. So it interests me a lot about this style and how this style evolved. Chelsea, what did you think of this matchup?
Oh, man, I thought this was really fun. It was cool to see a tag match where there was, like, there are some tag team spots in it, not spots, but, like, there are some moments in it where the teams work together.
Yeah.
But everybody works with their partner like they're singles wrestlers with a common goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like, oh, okay, you're going to beat her up over there. I'm going to go choke this other person. Like, I thought that was interesting. A lot of times I see tag matches where that happens and I don't like it. But here I felt like it had enough of a, like, a tense competitive feeling that it was interesting. I agree. I feel like Endo was the star. I think that kind of, like, shoot fight style is interesting when you have people who are really well trained in technical wrestling that's more like a classical style.
Yeah.
Because I feel like those things look really cool together. I think, actually, weirdly enough, one of my favorite things that happened in this was at one point Endo was being pinned and her opponent, who I'm not sure which one, what her name was, but she did not just like a back rake, but she actually like went for the exposed skin of her arm and raked her nails over it.
Mm.
And Endo sold it really well. And I was like, oh, that's, I've never seen anybody do that before. But it was like a little moment of realism where, like, I mean, of course, anybody who's like been a kid on a playground knows how that feels.
Yes.
And, you know, like I like that all these women who can also do these amazing things that are so acrobatic and like that you can't relate to, where you get to have that like power fantasy of, oh my god, you're such an incredible athlete, would also do things like that where you're like, oh, okay, that, you know, that hurts, you're being a jerk. I thought this was really fun. And you know, it's interesting, like, James, I'm realizing as we're talking about this that I don't understand how this company fit into the popular culture as a whole of what's happening around it. Like, what was the public perception of this style at the time? Was it considered like sort of lesser than? Was it considered like a cool, fresh, exciting thing? Like, what was it?
Right, let's start at the beginning. They didn't have the problems FMW had of being with Combat Toyota and Rio and Megumi Kudo being AJW rejects. They didn't have that issue because they were never associated with AJW. So it was just kind of its own thing. And as well, you know, obviously the Shoot Revolution, we talked about Akira Maeda and the UWF and Nobuyuki Takada and UWFI. That was in full swing at the time. So it was fairly obvious that a women's promotion was probably going to attempt this style. But they didn't really go on the full-on shoot style in the same way that UWF did or PWFG did. This was a bit more traditional professional wrestling style, lots of brawling, bit of comedy here and there. You know, it was still a pro wrestling company. But I think the key thing for them was Shinobi Kandori, Eagle Saiwai, Haile Sato, and Rumi Kizami, just because they were the four big stars of the company. And they could go to the other companies and be presented as big stars, hence Kandori versus Hokuto. So I think they carried the weight of the company on their shoulders a lot more than, say, even Manami Toyota did. Because, you know, you have Manami, but you've got Yoshi Tamada, and you've got Aja Kong, and you've got Bulmakani. Right. You've got seven or eight people to spread the weight of the company who are all individual draws. When you've only got four, that becomes a bit harder.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's the reason why. I mean, I was looking at this, and it kind of reminds me a lot of what modern Joshi is about, like smaller companies, not as big an audience, being more bespoke to a smaller audience. Like, the difference between, say, Wave and Stardom is very big, but this is kind of close to what Wave is, really, but Wave is kind of more entertainment, more fun, more comedy wrestling, but the actual wrestling style and the way Gami books things is very much related to what happens with this. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. It does.
Yeah, so that's where I think this is coming from, really. Okay, we'll move on to the next match then, which was Norio Tatiano's 15th anniversary show, for the 15th anniversary match, where she wrestled Rumi Kizami, the boss. She was the president of LLPW at the time. And this was a big celebration, obviously, of Tatiano's 15-year career with the Jumping on Bomb Angels in AJW, as a singles wrestler in AJW, and as a singles wrestler in LPW. And to help celebrate, Lioness Asuka, one half of the biggest drawing tag team in Japanese wrestling history, and Dump Matsumoto, her sworn lifetime enemy, came to say congratulations on 15 years and beat her up as a bit of fun before the match actually started. And then the match did start, and it was kind of much more of a traditional Joshi match. And like everyone has said so far today, one of the things that stood out to me was the fact there was loads of brawling, despite the fact they're both baby faces. And the crowd response was a bit more traditional as well. It was a bit more slow-paced. And the match was just generally better paced. You could tell these were two long-term pros. There wasn't the mix of rookies and pros that we've seen through this card. So it's a very different kind of feel. Chelsea, what did you think of this match? Because it is kind of historically important and does show what LLPW means as a company a bit more.
I really enjoyed this. I totally agree that the pacing was a lot better. And that actually, I think for me, just because it was more of something like I know how to interpret, it made it a little more enjoyable for me. I just want to say, the ref was so annoying during this match. The ref would not shut up, would not stop going and be like, do you need to tap out? Do you need to tap out? I'm like, no, she's not going to tap out. You can tell. Look at her face. I thought this was really interesting because the crowd seemed almost like equally invested in both things. Like, it was like the crowd was watching for an exhibition and not a competition. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was show us what you can do and we will appreciate it and we will politely applaud. I thought some of the spots in this were really interesting. There's one spot where Tateno goes for kind of like an Irish whip, and her opponent stops in like right in the middle of it, right as she's about to turn, and then like back fists her. And I was like, okay, girl, like that was really, I've never seen somebody do that with that timing. And then, you know, you get in the middle of these like very classical Joshi spots, like the surfboards and the knee to the back of the head. And like a lot of that stuff I expected. But there's also still that little element that I feel like is characteristic of the stuff that I watched in the rest of this show of, okay, but this is a space where we can try some stuff.
Yeah.
We can see, like, what is, you know, what happens if I, like, if I put you in a leg lock or, like, a body scissors and then I slam you onto your tailbone. I was like, I haven't seen anybody do that before, and maybe there's a reason, but it also still looked really cool. Like, it was really refreshing.
Yeah.
Also, I love their costumes in this because you could tell that unlike some of the girls who probably made their costumes themselves or purchased things, that their gear was probably made by a professional. And it's very, it's like dystopian cyberpunk fantasy stuff, but not like lower budget, but still I don't know. There's leopard print and studs and bright colors, interspersed with black, and I like that. When I was watching this, I sort of I was surprised that it was like a career anniversary match, because I would have expected something for that to be more contentious.
Yeah.
But I feel like maybe the thing that was needed was just like, you know, remind us all how you got here. Like, it was a little more quiet to me than I was expecting. Also, there's a couple spots in it that remind me very strongly of recent NJPW stuff, like tossing your opponent in a, you know, like doing a snapmare so she lands on a bunch of chairs.
Yeah.
I was like, I've seen Okada do that. I mean, like that's a theme whenever we watch 90s Joshi, right? As I look at it, and I'm like, this is many years ahead of its time if you compare it to what the men are doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Kenny Omega and Okada are doing things that basically happened 25 years ago, but just not many people saw it, relatively speaking.
Right. But, you know, try to get some of those diehard fanboys who love them now to watch women's wrestling. It's like, oh, okay. But anyway, no, I thought this was a really good match. I thought this was really fun. I will say that if you're watching anything from this program specifically to find something you've never seen before, this is probably the most, like, a lot of the other 90s Joshi I've watched. But that doesn't mean it's not worth watching. It's still really fun and really creative.
What did you think of this one, Christy?
This one felt like coming home a bit.
Yeah.
because it was way more like the stuff I watch now than anything else on this card. It slowed down, but I liked that. I felt more relaxed. The other matches felt a bit more frantic, you know? They were going full speed ahead. And it was clear that these two wouldn't be able to match that speed and had different intentions with this match. This was more of a story that gradually built up to the end. There was a reason behind it, but they also wanted to achieve something. They wanted to tell something and show us that this is the story of the match. This is going to end in the victory for someone. That sounds really basic, but that was the aim of the story. The story being, I'm going to hit you with a table or with a chair or make you bleed.
Yeah.
It was a lot more technical. It was focused on submissions. It gave me a chance to breathe. And I really needed that after all these matches of chair shots and chains and bleeding and being really confused who was who. It was really nice to see this. And you could tell, like you guys said, that these two were much more experienced. And they knew to take their time. They didn't rush into the spots they wanted to hit. They really wrestled. And because it reminded me of the stuff I watch now, it was so calming and relaxing. I really enjoyed it. Of course, they still had a chair shot and jumps to the outside and stuff like that. But overall, it felt very controlled and safe, and I really enjoyed it.
I think, I mean, when we were reading the notes for this, they did say, well, it's just because Tatiana's older and she can't do the things she used to do, and Kazami is still slowing down a little bit as well. I'm like, yeah, no, I think it's just because they're better. They know what they're doing.
And also, they don't need to prove themselves.
Yeah.
You know? They're established. They are the establishment to some extent. Like, I've seen Tatiana in matches where, like, she's so determined because she has to be, because, you know, she has to prove herself as being better than someone either from another company or like another girl who could take her spot. And yeah, that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is like, we know what we're doing. We know who we are. You guys know who we are. You're privileged to watch us do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen Tatiana, there's plenty of examples where when she was young, she was trying to take somebody's spot as well, you know, jumping on Bomb Angels in Madison Square Garden against the Glamour Girls. They were clearly trying to steal the show, which was hard to do, and they did. You know, trying to steal a show from Hulk Hogan in 1985 in Madison Square Garden, they managed it. Not many other people did.
Any of those girls could eat Hulk Hogan for lunch any day of the week.
I meant from a overness point of view.
I'm just saying.
I know. I think we can probably name stuffed animals that are far more interesting to watch than Hulk Hogan wrestling, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anywho. Yeah, just a couple of notes on this match before we go any further. If you may notice that we talked about Rumi Hamza before, Rumi Kazama before. We've talked about her long flowing locks and her long, luscious, curly hair, which she unfortunately lost to Akira Hokuto about a year before in a hair versus hair match. Hence the reason why she has this interesting coif in this particular match. But I did want to give a moment's respect and appreciation, damn it, for Dump Matsumoto's mullet in this particular run-up, because it was glorious. Shaved at the sides, black on the sides, blonde on top. Just brilliant.
And like the amount of work that went into making that very, very carefully crafted aesthetic, you know, if you wore that on the street in Japan, someone's going to stare at you. Not just Japan, anywhere. Yeah, I appreciate that too. That's worth noting.
And she was retired by two years at this point as well. She wasn't even wrestling, but she's got the mullet. She's got it going on. Oh, right then, we move on to the next match, which was Carula versus Carol Midori. Now, Carula was actually Harley Sato under a mask in a different kind of outfit and character in a great Muta style-y. My notes say, what in the seven shades of shit is going on with Harley Sato? But it was a different style. It was definitely a different style to what we're used to seeing her do. But it was good. I liked it. I mean, I like this match. And I love Carol Midori as well. She has such a cool style to her. She's kind of like reminds me of a kind of young Ricky Morton kind of deal. It was very Rock and Roll Express kind of thing going on with her. And a lot of fun to watch. What did you think of this, Christy?
Well, the first thing I've written down is capitalized, and it says, what is that outfit for Carula? She looks like a chicken.
Yes, I said that as well. I don't really know.
She looks like the bad prototype that Marty Skrull probably has somewhere in his basement.
Yes.
you know, like, that was the early drafts did not come out so well.
I do know the person that designs Marty Skrull's ring gear, so I could ask her, do you have any designs that look roughly like this? No?
Yeah. But honestly, what did she do to be given that mask?
I don't know.
It was horrible. But somehow, though, she was still weirdly cool.
Yes. See, this is.
She looked like a mess, but she was still cool.
This is the thing with alter ego wrestlers, all of them. You know, and there's been obviously Great Muta is the most famous one, but like Jushin Liger's ultimate bad guy character, he takes the mask off and his face is painted and he comes out as this fire breathing death machine. Atsushi Inita had one, the Great Nita as well. They all have to be very different from the original one, or a certain aesthetic that's different. And you haven't seen Harley Sato wrestle before, have you?
Nope.
So me and Chelsea have something to A, B off that against, whereas you don't. So to you, it just comes off as a large chicken who can wrestle really well.
And who was still cool.
Yes.
Somehow.
A live chicken, but she can get down.
Yes.
Yes.
Badass chicken.
But she was a walking contradiction, really.
Yes, what did you think of Midori?
I liked her. I really, really liked her. I think the match was supposed to get Carula over, as in the new character, the whole look, and being cool and beating down this Midori. But she did it so well. I related to her, and I really got into her, and I liked her, and I wanted her to do well. And she did get some stuff in as well, and she looked pretty impressive, even though it was clear she was not the focus of this match. We were supposed to pay attention to the chicken.
Indeed.
It sounds really weird, but if you watch the match, I swear it looks like a chicken.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with
they
that.
They use a chair. Sorry?
I agree with that.
Of course there was a chair again, because why not? Why not include a chair? And Carula used feathers to get an advantage at some point, which I thought was really creative. On the other hand, what are feathers going to do? Maybe surprise an opponent, but you're not going to knock them out or get a roll up over someone doing something with feathers to you.
Yeah.
But again, that was the character, and they were trying to get the character over. I'm curious, did it ever get over at all?
I've never seen a wrestler in that particular outfit again after that.
No, I guess not.
Probably not.
Once was enough.
Yeah.
I mean, again, because we haven't got the context, we don't know if this was a badass blood feud between Harley Sato and Midori, do we? But
no, I don't. Things so, though.
It no, it, does, it wasn't. Didn't feel like that. Yeah, no, but yeah. Okay.
It felt like either a beginning of a feud or just a random match to try and see how this new character works.
You set somebody up.
Yeah.
By the way, one of WCW's most failed storylines, which never really got off the ground, just reminded me of it, was when the Great Muta went off back off excursion back to New Japan Pro Wrestling to become an international multi-million dollar star. WCW clearly had a hole to fill. So they announced a new masked character who came to the ring in gear that was very similar to the Great Muta's. But it wasn't the Great Muta. It was a guy called Ranger Ross. And if you've never seen Ranger Ross wrestle, he was about the same height as Muta, knew some karate kicks, and was a African-American gentleman who was about, 6 foot two, like Muta is, in the same gear, trying to do the same stuff. Unremarkably, didn't work. Anyway, Chelsea, what did you think of this matchup?
Can I make one more comment?
Oh, sorry, Christy, go on.
Talking about how she is weirdly cool, they did these backstage interviews before and after the matches, and she also has a sword, apparently.
She's a chicken samurai warrior.
So, it's a chicken with a sword.
Chicken with a sword.
Just had to add that. Sorry. Go ahead, Chelsea.
So, I really enjoyed this. To me, I had so much fun watching Midori wrestle. I love watching matches where the person whose job it is to sell and make the other person look good, the person whose job it is to kind of hold themselves back from getting over so the other person can get over, has that natural effortlessness to them. She is just so good. I watched at one point she did like a drop down into not like a drop toe hold, but she went for to try to get her opponent onto the mat, and it didn't quite work, and she just kind of rolled with it, and I was like, wow, you really know what you're doing. Harley Sato, I don't understand why she couldn't just be herself. The chicken thing is bizarre. But it didn't seem to matter to the crowd, though. Either the crowd knew who she was and was like, you're still the best, we love you. She just comes across as really, really cool. I enjoyed, there's no, for me as a viewer, there's no work to watching this and getting into it, because they both know how to tell you a story. They both just know what they're doing. And it was kind of like what Christy was saying about one of the earlier matches, where it's relaxing to me, I guess, because some of it's more familiar to me. Despite the giant chicken mask. I don't know. I thought this was interesting because it's similar stylistically to some of the AJW and JWP stuff that I've watched, but also without that tension of I have to get myself over so I will kill you if I have to.
Yes.
Which is weird because Midori has blood in her mouth by the end of it, and there are chair shots.
Yeah.
It's chair shots, but everybody's still friends and went out for beers afterwards, you know? there's some camaraderie at play. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought that those two had good chemistry. I would like to watch them have a match where Harley Sato isn't wearing that ridiculous outfit.
You just reminded me of another story as well, actually. I'm going to tell this one, because it's not to do with wrestling. Well, it is to do with wrestling. You may remember an American wrestler called Big Cat Ernie Ladd, who played for the Kansas City Chiefs. He was defensive end. And they were playing the New York Jets. Now, obviously, Joe Namath in the 1960s was the big franchise player for the Jets. He was New York. Ernie Ladd knew this and wasn't about to kill off New York's biggest franchise player. So when he went in to sack Joe, he managed to clobber him around the chest and drag him to the floor. And when Joe came to, he had his helmet on. He was seeing through the hole in the side of his helmet and got it squared up. Anyway, Big Cat walked over to him and said, "Hey, don't worry about it, Broadway. I know about your knees. I hit you high." There you go.
That's a great comfort.
6'10", 320 pounds, part-time professional wrestler, Big Cat, Ernie Ladd. There you go. Didn't kill Joe Namath when he had the chance. Anyway, we'll move on to the main event of this particular tape, which, as you would imagine, would feature their two biggest stars. Eagle Saiwai, who was kind of in the Aja Kong Bull Nakano monster mode, and she was very good in that role too. And maybe not as confident as Kong and as Nakano, but certainly knew what she was doing about getting over and being a monster heel against Shinobi Kandori, the scariest lady on the LLPW roster by a long way, who still terrifies me to this day, and she's nearly 60. And it was a bit of a knockdown, drag out affair, as you'd imagine. Two biggest stars in the company. What I'm not sure it was for the LLPW title, although the belt was kind of like branded around at the beginning. Saiwai was the champion at the time, and Kandori ended up winning the match. But it was a lot of fun to watch two big stars, especially as, again, as we talked about today, there's a lot of rookies on this particular card, and you do see the whole roster and the whole style of the company. But when you see the two biggest stars together, it was a much better matchup. Kind of a styles clash, but I thought it was okay. I thought it was thoroughly enjoyable and really showcased what LLPW means to me as a fan from what I've seen of it. Chelsea, what did you think of this particular matchup?
Oh, man, this is really fun. Eagle Saiwai, I love her entrance robe, that it's like this big, flowy, flowery red thing, and then she takes it off, and nothing she has on underneath that has anything to do with that robe at all. You know, she takes it off and she looks like a prototype for a Final Fantasy character with all these random pieces of fabric hanging off a black bodysuit. And I was like, okay, I guess you can move in that unrestricted and it still looks kind of flowy and cool. And then, you know, Shinobu Kandori, like, in contrast, has like this like bodysuit on where it's clearly designed so that she can fuck you up as efficiently as possible. There's nothing in her way. There's a spot where they're rolling around on the mat and Eagle Saiwai, I think, goes for like a headlock or something, and Shinobu Kandori gets her arm and then rolls her over and then goes like she's going to bite her arm. And, I mean, Shinobu Kandori doesn't have to do anything to be f***ing terrifying. You know, she doesn't have to make you bleed or whatever. She's got that fierce energy where you're like, you're gonna run somebody over. I really enjoy watching Eagle Saiwai wrestle because she is a big girl who doesn't necessarily need to use her bigness to crush her opponent and, you know, be a really fierce competitor. And I feel like there's one of the things that happens to a lot of girls who have that body type that, you know, I see Eagle Saiwai working against and that I see Bull Nakano working against. Is there's this thing of like your body is so terrifying and so like has been criminalized by the people around you. It's been politicized by the people around you because it's less acceptable. So like you're sort of supposed to throw it at the other person to, you know, prove like, yeah, I'm a monster. I'm a giant wrecking ball, which is kind of what Aja Kong does, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's nice seeing a girl who has that bigger body type who is like, no, I'm going to get on the mat and roll around and it's going to be super f***ing elegant. Or I'm going to suplex you over my head and do a nice, beautiful bridge. I like that. I like that she hangs on to her artistry where she's like, no, the point isn't that I'm a wrecking ball. The point is that I deserve to be here even though I'm not.
Yeah.
A lot of times I hear people, when people interview Nia Jax, they always talk about, they're like, oh, you should watch Aja Kong. You should watch Aja Kong. And watching this, I was like, no, she should watch Eagle Saiwai.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's the thing you need to get to. That's the thing that would be so refreshing if they let it happen for her. I don't know, to me, just like being a bigger girl myself, like when I get to see a girl like that who is also a really good athlete who knows how to use her body and not just to, like, run people over. That was so refreshing for me. I'm sorry, James, what were you going to say?
I'm on that point. I'm wondering if Viper has spent more time looking at Eagle Saiwai than she has done at Aja Kong.
Because I would bet.
Because she wrestles a lot more like that.
Yeah, she does. And, like, I appreciate... She has a little bit of that thing that... obviously, her aesthetic is very different from Eagle Saiwai's aesthetic, like the way they present themselves. But the way she presents herself is so intentionally girly, and Eagle Saiwai does that too. Like she's got bright pink all over her bodysuit in this match, and she's got streaks of color in her hair. Like there's an element of yes, I'm a big girl, but I'm also very femme. Hmm. And I really appreciate that, because so often, I mean, like, you know, Aja Kong intentionally is not femme in any context. She's intentionally like, no, I'm going to be as masculine as possible, and it's going to piss you off.
Yeah.
And also, it's interesting because, like, Sawai wrestling Kandori, Kandori is another woman who, for different reasons, has had to square off with the fact that her body type and her aesthetic is not what Japanese society, or really, like, any society says, like, a woman is supposed to look this way. Like, she knows. She's like, no, I'm not going to be one of those pretty girls with the long flowing hair who's going to make you feel like, oh, I'm watching you on TV and I can imagine you as my girlfriend. She's like, no, I'm an athlete. I'm a competitor. I'm a shark. It's interesting because they both have had to square off with those things. They've both had to figure out a way to reconcile them and, like, package themselves to use that tension to make themselves interesting. And I think that's part of why this match is cool, at least for me personally. Maybe I'm just projecting that stuff onto it, but for me, that's what I saw in it that I really connected to, is those two both have their own ways in which they don't fit in with regular people, and they found this thing they're really good at, and they're going to do it at a really high level, whether you like them or not.
No, I agree with you, and I can give you another example of that. Kandori wrestled Megumi Kudo in FMW, which ended up in, as it had to, end up in a barbed wire death match.
Oh, yeah.
But Kandori wore a suit. She didn't wear wrestling tights. She wore a Yakuza suit. She wore a black shirt, red tie, black suit, pair of dark glasses,
wow,
and shoes. Which
to
you
wrestle the hardcore sweetheart.
Yeah. So, you know, that tells you there was, there's Megumi Kudo, his literally the embodiment of the best looking woman in Japanese wrestling, because everyone says she is. So I can't be that. So I will be the opposite of that, and I will embody the opposite of that.
Mm.
Interesting. Interesting way she handles herself and handles her business is Shinobi Kandori. She does the opposite of what you expect on many levels.
Yeah. She wants to, she has a little bit of that, again, I think of it as like the classic Aja Kong thing of like, well, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right off the bat, where she's like, fuck your expectations. But she seems to be more at peace than some other of her contemporaries are with the fact that that is a thing and she can use it to her advantage.
Yes.
She's not quite as angry about it, which allows her to be viciously angry and terrifying about, I am going to beat you. Because I'm the best.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Christy, what did you think of this matchup?
I was so excited for this one. I mean, this entire show had been a roller coaster, and I was just so excited to see which match they'd chosen to be their main event, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, this is going to be huge. And it kind of was. Especially also because I was Googling their names and their images to figure out who was who, you know, like I was checking out what do they look like. And then I saw that Kandori is apparently a politician now,
mm-hmm,
for the Liberal Democratic Party. And I was like, okay, this is either going to be really boring or really cool to see one of them. I don't know how to explain this. Someone who turns into a Liberal Democratic Party member who was a wrestler before. And I'd seen both of their looks, and I'm like, they're clearly stars. They look like stars. They've got distinct looks just from looking at their Google images. You can tell that they're stars, as opposed to some of the other girls who you could tell these girls haven't really wrestled that much, but these two looked like actual stars. And then they walked out, and you can tell that they have such confidence in who they are as wrestlers, but also as characters.
Mm-hmm.
They looked very different, but they both had this quality of, I know what my role is, I know what I'm going to do, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I know the story I'm going to tell. And that was so nice, because while other matches had that as well, I think those were wrestlers that were looking to find what their thing was.
Yes.
And what their position in the company was. But these two didn't need to do that. They weren't worried about where they were going with their wrestling or their character. They just knew, this is my role, this is who I am. I'm confident, I'm comfortable being who I am, and I'm going to give you an amazing wrestling match.
Yeah, I think that really sums things up nicely. I mean, obviously me and Chelsea have kind of like a deeper background with Kandori and Eagle Saiway because of the amount of stuff we've watched of them, when I say lately, over the last 2 years whilst we've been doing this series, and they crop up again and again and again, and they are well-rounded professional wrestlers who know what they're doing and know their place. I mean, Kandori's still... she's still a presence. I mean, she does a lot of MMA fights now as well. She isn't just a wrestler. She was an Olympic bronze medalist in judo. You know, she's a world-class athlete. And she takes that presence and applies itself. She is Brock Lesnar, but 20 years before, with more personality.
And more skill.
And more skill, yeah. You know, as a professional wrestler. She's unreal, you know. It's interesting you're saying about, like, your conceptions of... who in pro wrestling becomes politicians? Kandori is one good example, but Atsushi, you would bear in mind that Japan once had Atsushi Inita as their government spokesman for health, or sexual health.
Isn't Inoki in the diet?
Yeah, Inoki has been in the diet for about 20 years. Hiro Hase, inventor of the Northern Light Suplex, is in their congress. So, yeah, wrestling's a fairly respectable, well-respected mainstream thing in Japan, you see. Not like here, where we get Rick Steiner in the state legislature in Georgia and Kane as the mayor of a small town in Knoxville.
Can we all just hope that Will Ospreay never runs for anything?
Oh, God. He would try, though. He'd think his opinion.
He would try.
It's all right, it's Essex.
He would try.
Yeah, he can look at Essex County Council, I'm sure, would figure out what to do with him. Not much, probably.
I hope so.
And also, let's hope that Zack Sabre Jr. runs for something.
He's in Kent next door, so yeah, I think he probably will do. In fact, I'm pretty damn sure he will probably run for either a council seat or an MP seat when he retires, I would think.
I can see it.
Yeah, definitely. He's that politically motivated. Right then, before we finish, I should ask, what are your closing impressions of this particular promotion? I'll start with you, Christy, because we went for a second with you to start with. So having watched the whole card, would you watch more? And what do you think are the key things that stand out from you from LFPW in this time period?
I didn't know what to expect going in. I had expectations, and I've seen stuff, but I knew nothing about this promotion, about any of the wrestlers, so I was just like a blank canvas. Just, it was great. The more I got used to it, the more I enjoyed it. The first two matches, I think I was just so confused and trying to figure out, who are these wrestlers, what are their roles, how does the promotion see wrestling? Because promotions like New Japan see it as serious, and they're good. They're having fun and stuff, but they see it as serious wrestling, and they want to be international stars, and they want to have some sort of message to the crowd, like, these are our wrestlers, and they're really good at what they do, and they get 5-star matches every night and stuff like that. Whereas, like, Tokyo Joshi Pro is more into being fun and showcasing different characters and having fun storylines. And I was really curious to see what this promotion wanted to show. And I think their message is 90% of our wrestlers are assholes, and they will hit you with chairs. But they can still wrestle really, really well if
Fair
they
enough.
Want to. And the longer this went on, the more I got used to them and that message, and I got really into the matches, especially the two I mentioned, and then the one with the chicken, and the last one. I really got into, and I think that's also because I got used to it. So I think if I watch another show, I might enjoy the first matches more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would watch more. I don't generally watch stuff outside of the promotions I watch, because like I said, I get overwhelmed really easily, and once I get into something, I don't let go. So if I really got into this promotion, I'd look for all the tapes and all the matches, and I don't want to do that. But if I watched another one, I probably would enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Christy. I know you have to get going, so we'll say thank you. And you can find her at SmarkInfested on Twitter, as well as at New Japan GIFs, NJPW GIFs, and of course, Wrestling Sexism. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, guys. It was really fun. Bye.
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 And I'll ask Chelsea to wrap up the show. Chelsea, what did you think of the company, where it was in 1995, and what do you think of the stars from this particular show?
This was really interesting. It felt to me, as we've said a whole bunch throughout the show, like a little bit of an experimental product. Like they wanted to do something, and they wanted to try to do something different from the stuff that was mainstream. I've realized that I find it more relaxing. Not necessarily, not saying it's better, but it's more relaxing than a lot of the other Joshi products I've seen at the time, because even when you're watching a death match, it doesn't quite have that life or death feeling that you sometimes get watching JWP or AJW. And I think that's just, you know, partly a byproduct of just not being the top dog. I think the quality of the wrestling is really great. Even the girls who are inexperienced relative to the big stars still seem like they really know what they're doing and like they're well trained. And, you know, I saw a lot of girls on this card where I'm like, you're not there yet, but you're going to get there. I think it's a refreshing Joshi product. I don't watch it and think it looks exactly like anything else I've seen before. I think it's refreshingly different. It's lots of little things I've seen in other places put together in an interesting way. In terms of where it is contextually, like how fans felt about it, that's a little harder for me to guess because of the way this special was put together, where it's like different events cut together. But it does seem to have a passionate audience. And I mean, people know, like, especially when you get the big stars like Eagle Sawa and Shino Bukendori, people know how good they are. Or Harley Saito, people know how good she is. So I enjoyed seeing that. You know, it's a very different dynamic, like you were saying, from in AJW, where you have like 20 people who are top contenders for best in the world versus 4 or 5 girls who are kind of leading everybody. If you had described that to me without me watching it, I don't know that I would have thought I would enjoy it as much as I did. I liked it. I would probably watch more, especially if you found a full show where it's all from the same event. That would be really interesting. I would want to watch that, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the thing. I mean, we probably had the same issue with the Michinoku Pro tape we watched about a year and a half ago, where it was random six-mans from around Japan, but the best thing to do with it was to look at the characters and explain the characters and how they got across and over. And I think it was really successful. But I think this is the same thing here. We're getting a snapshot. It's kind of advantageous to do it this way because we're getting a snapshot of what LLPW was like in this particular time period. And it was a snappy young company that was trying really hard to do something different with professional wrestling. And I think they did it really well. There were elements they could improve, like most companies could do. But for me, it was just, it was good Joshi. And it was different Joshi, and it was different characters, and it was being able to get hooked into that again.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good Joshi product. It doesn't remind me exactly of anything else I've seen before. It doesn't feel derivative It doesn't feel repetitive. It doesn't feel redundant.
No.
And a lot of other Joshi products from this time that are not AJW or JWP do feel redundant. They feel like they're trying too hard to be redundant, and they're not there.
Yeah.
This is trying to do its own thing. It's trying to be subversive and cool, and it is.
Indeed. Right then, we will have to call it for today. I would like to thank my other guest, Miss Chelsea Spallin, Shoulders Up. You can find her at Chelsea Comics on Twitter and shoulders_up, where she talks about wrestling more than the other one.
Yes.
And
yes, more than my personal account.
And thank you very much for your time today, Mom.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
It was. Okay, then. We'll be back next week. We're not really sure what we're going to look at next week. Might be Triple Mania. Might be All In, because that's No, that's next weekend, so we won't be all in. Might be Triple Mania, might be something else. We will see when we've decided in the production chat, our world-famous now Twitter production chat. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can follow the show at Troopini Show on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook for the Troopini Show and on Patreon, where you can keep the show free forever for everyone. If you'd like to sponsor us, please send an email to troopinishow@gmail.com, and I will get back to you. For now, take care, and we'll see you next week. Bye! We'll be right back.